Okay, the Haftorah for Truma is interesting. It's one of those Haftorahs where you don't really have to think very hard as to why it's connected to the Parsha. You don't have to come up with any creative interpretations. The similarities are blatant. And in fact, it's actually the differences which then become more striking, because it's more clearly what's the same, what parallels the Parsha. So it's worth noting where there are differences, and those differences seem to create a deliberate contrast. Our Parsha tells us about the Tzivoy regarding the Mishkan and starts that whole process. We have a directive, Osuli Mikdash V'Shachanti B'Soicham. And as the Sefer HaChinuch and the Minchas Chinuch points out, that this is the tzivui that we have not just at that time, but throughout the generations. That the construction of an edifice for God's presence is a mitzvah that we have throughout. It just takes different forms. So some of the Mefarshim ask, how could that be that one mitzvah is going to include the Mishkan and Shiloh and the first base of Mikdash and the second base of Mikdash? They have different dimensions, which is part of the topic of the Parsha of the Torah. They have different rules. So how is that possible? So explain that we have a notion, HaKol B'Ksav, Miyad Hashem, Malah Hizkil, Pasuk says, the Gemara tells us in Zvachim, that the details of the construction had to come through the Navi. And therefore, that's the key here, that yes, the structures take on different details in each generation that was relevant, but that doesn't change the fact that it's all one tzivui, and the tzivui is that you'll follow the instructions of the Navi and the details in how exactly that will come about. So on the surface, what you have here is the same mitzvah in the Torah, in the Parsha, and in the Haftorah. The Mishkan of the Parsha and the Beis HaMikdash of Shlomo, they're all a fulfillment of the same directive. Yet, you will also notice that there are differences, that there are details and there are themes that are different between the two, and that is striking. So among them is the nature of the project, that the project in the time of Moshe and the Mishkan is a communal project. It's done with the efforts of all of Klal Yisrael, and we'll talk more about that maybe in a minute. And it's also done through willing donations. Kol Asher Yidvanu Libo. We have a constant theme of Nedivus Halev in the Parsha, and throughout in connection with the Mishkan. We find that the Jews were very happy to participate in the construction, both in doing the jobs and in donating and bringing their materials towards the construction, so much so that we're also told that they got too many donations. They had more than they needed from what the Jews were willing to offer. So we have that theme very prominent as far as the Mishkan is concerned. While the Mikdash of the Haftorah is really very different. The project is not a project of the people so much. It's actually subcontracted. It's actually done through outside efforts. You have people who were involved in the supplies and in the construction who are coming from other countries. And even the Jews who were actually involved, it's not clear how Jewish they were. They were gerim of possibly questionable nature, and there's a whole discussion to be had among the Rishonim and others. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, in his commentary to Nach, Melachim, talks about the various perspectives on this. It's very much contrasted with our parasha, where we have the Jews getting together and making the Mishkan in all the senses of the word. And the Beis HaMikdash has a whole different focus to it, and in the financial sense as well. So instead of talking about Nedivos Halev, instead we find a mas, that there's a tax, a levy, that's imposed upon the Jews in the time of Shlomo, and that's where the fundraising comes from. So there's a very different kind of atmosphere, and it's striking. You know, what exactly is the message of that? There is, from a Lomdishah perspective, there is an approach that possibly distinguishes, maybe just to talk about the Lomdus for a second, of the Mishkan, and we'll put it in context. It's interesting, here we have a mitzvah to construct the Mishkan, as we said, and the mitzvah, according to the Gemara in a few places, there are limitations. So the Gemara says that in reference to building the Beis HaMikdash, we don't build the Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos or on Yontif. And we also don't build the Beis HaMikdash, a different Gemara, we don't build the Beis HaMikdash at night. The Gemara in Yuvamba says that we don't build on Shabbos or Yontif, that Shmirah Shabbos is a higher priority than building the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara Mesachet Shavuos tells us that we don't build the Beis HaMikdash at night. So it's interesting that the Rambam, in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, he brings both of those limitations. But he also says that everyone is obligated in the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, the men and the women. So that's a little striking, because if you don't build a Beis HaMikdash at night, and you don't build a Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos or Yontif, so that's a limitation which we find elsewhere in Halacha. For example, a mitzvah that has those exact same limitations is tefillin. We don't wear tefillin at night, we don't wear tefillin on Shabbos or Yontif. And yet, tefillin is like a paradigmatic mitzvah saseh shahazman grama. Women are pater from tefillin, so why should they also be pater from Binyan Beis HaMikdash? So this is a discussion a number of Achronim consider. And there's a lot to try to figure out about how these different parts come together. The Mikdash David, if I remember correctly, Mikdash David points out that you have to say that a Beis HaMikdash that is built on Shabbos or Yontif or at nighttime, it's not a psul in the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash would still be kosher. It's just a prohibition on us to do it for whatever ramifications that has. How do you know that that's true? Because there is a discussion the Gemara has in Maseches Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara has a striking din. I feel like we may have talked about this in a different context. I don't remember. But the Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made a takana that is a little difficult to understand. That Yom Henef Kulo Asur. Yom Henef is the second day of Pesach. It's the day of the Hakravas HaOmer. And normally the halacha is that the Chodesh is prohibited, so it becomes permitted after the Hakravas HaOmer on the second day of Pesach. But what about if there's no Beis HaMikdash, so you can't have a Hakravas HaOmer? So then the dinner is Min HaTorah, it's going to be mutter right away at the beginning of the day. But the Gemara says that we shouldn't do that practically, because we're afraid that maybe things will change and people won't realize that Meheru Yibana HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash, will be rebuilt at some point, and the rules are going to change. You're going to have the Omer first, and maybe people won't realize that things have changed. So in order to avoid that problem, no eating Chodesh that day. Next day is when it starts. So it's a very tricky takana to understand for a lot of reasons. It's targeted at a very specific kind of situation. And the Gemara already asks, well, when is this going to happen? If it was built a few weeks before, so the word gets out, and people will be posting it on Facebook, everyone's going to know exactly what's going on with the change. And everybody's going to be giving shiurim in the shuls how life is different now. So why are we so afraid people aren't going to know? It must be very close up to the border in terms of when it happens. So the Gemara says, yeah, either it was going to be built the night before or the day before. So the Rishonim ask, you have to figure out what's going on there, because there's a problem with each of those. Right? You can't build a Beis HaMikdash at night or on Yontif. So what's the night before falls out at night? And the day before, what's the day before the second day of Pesach? Do the math. First day of Pesach. Right? First day of Pesach always falls out on Yontif. Right? So isn't that going to be a problem? So Rishonim struggle as to what exactly that means in light of these prohibitions. Many point to a tradition you have in the Rishonim, Rashi, and Maseches Sukkah quotes this, that Fani Asav of Dosa Be'esh, that the third Beis HaMikdash is not going to be constructed by us physically, but it's going to come down from Shemayim completely already. So the Mikdash David points out, Stipler points out, others point out, that you see from here that apparently the Beis HaMikdash is still valid if it's constructed at night or on Shabbos or Yom Tov. There's a prohibition on us not to do it. And Mefarshim also try to figure out, the Achron try to figure out, in light of this tradition, that the third Beis HaMikdash is going to come from Shemayim. So then what role do we have? If this mitzvah is a mitzvah ledoros, then we have to fulfill Basuli Mikdash. So that what role do we have if the third Beis HaMikdash is coming by itself? And the Rambam brings us the mitzvah ledoros, so it has to have some future relevance to us. So where is that relevance? So that's something that Svarim try to figure out. But it enters into this whole equation of, is this really a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama? Like, tzitzis or tefillin? Or is it something else? Is it a limitation in a different way? So there are many different approaches to this, many, many different angles you can find in different svarim. The Minchas Elazar, for example, Minchat Rebbe has a number of approaches. One of the approaches he mentions is that perhaps it's not really considered to be a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama unless the mitzvah is completely bound within a certain time period. If it just takes a break, but then comes back, so then that's not called zman grama. It's like the difference between the stop button and the pause button. Are you finished, or are you just on pause, and then it's going to start again from there? So tefillin, you have a mitzvah to wear tefillin today. Today is Wednesday. Tonight, today's Thursday, okay, when it gets dark tonight, so then that's over. And yes, tomorrow morning it's going to be light again, but it's a different mitzvah. That's a mitzvah of tefillin for Friday. So today's mitzvah of tefillin is completely bound in by this zone. But the mitzvah of the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, that is ongoing. That's not something which is going to stop when it gets dark. It just takes a pause during that time. So maybe that's not called a mitzvah saseh shehazman grama. He has a few other approaches there. He also mentions a possibility that maybe the rules are different for kachrim, like the Gemara in the middle of Zvachim tells us that there are different principles for learning out halachic details in kachrim than there is in the rest of the Torah. So maybe that's a factor here. Then you have to figure out whether Beis HaMikdash is called kachrim. It could be just karbanos. It's called kachrim. That's a discussion in and of itself. But in any event, that's a possible approach also. He also mentions, as other achronim do as well, that we have a pasuk that tells us explicitly that the women were involved in the building of the mikdash, that kol isha chachmas lev. So maybe that's like a gibli from a pasuk, the same way that kiddush or matzah, you would have thought that those mitzvahs are mitzvahs to say shahazman grama, but we have psukim that indicate that they're obligatory on women anyway. So maybe that's a giloy from the pasuk that the mitzvah of Beis HaMikdash, women are obligated in as well. Then there's a discussion with, is the pasuk telling us that they had to be involved, they chose to be involved? That's a whole discussion in and of itself. But it's among the many approaches that the Sfarim have to figuring out whether this mitzvah could be characterized as a mitzvah seisha as man grama, or is it something else despite these limitations? So a part of the whole discussion, there's a nice discussion about this in the Tshuvas of Rabbi Lau, the Lau senior, in his Tshuvas Yachal Yisrael, has a discussion about this in his Sefer. And he considers the question that we have to figure out, what do we mean when we look at the mitzvah of the Binyan Beis HaMikdash? Is that a mitzvah that is essentially a hechsher mitzvah? Is it something that we do so that we will be able to carry out certain functions? We'll be able to carry out the korbanos? Or is it a mitzvah in and of itself? And to that extent, So do we say that the mitzvah of building the Beis HaMikdash is a Maisa mitzvah, that one has to be involved in the actual act of construction? Or do we see that we're talking about some kind of a broader communal involvement in all the different components? So, for example, when we say that you can't build a Beis HaMikdash on Shabbos and Yantif at nighttime, so maybe we mean the actual hammer and nails, so to speak. I mean, symbolically. It wasn't done with hammer and nails, but the actual brick and mortar, whatever contemporary expression you want to use for the construction of a physical building. So that wasn't done on Shabbos and Yantif. But the broader involvement in getting people all riled up, excited, and the drushes and the fundraising and the committees. So the committees, they meet at night, and the drushes about it, they'll happen on Shabbos. The broader involvement in the process of the Binyan HaMikdash, so that's something which is not subject to any such limitations. It's interesting also, he points to a difference in the Mefarshim, that the Psukim and Chumash that say the Jewish people built the Mishkan. So it's a question in the Mefarshim, what that means. Does it mean that they built it because the ones who actually constructed it were shluchim of the rest of the nation? Or is it a reference to their broader participation, the fact that they donated and they contributed in other ways? So that's what we mean when we say that they donated. So this has a number of implications. And perhaps it goes to the question also of how you understand the function of the Beis HaMikdash in its own sense. Is the Beis HaMikdash a mitzvah b'fnei atzmo, that there is a din to have a Beis HaMikdash? Or is the purpose of the Beis HaMikdash as a hekshar mitzvah so that you can bring korbanos? So this itself might be a machlokas, the Rambam and the Ramban, because there is a question how to count the mitzvah here. So we have an obligation to make the Beis HaMikdash, and we have an obligation to make the kelim. So is that one mitzvah or is that two mitzvahs? So the Rambam counts it as one mitzvah. And the Ramban counts the mitzvah of the binyan as one and the mitzvah of kelim as the other. So what's the difference there? So there are those who suggest
Ramban counts them as
two separate mitzvahs. So there are those who suggest that it goes to the question of what's the purpose here. That is the purpose just to be prepared for the korbanos, so that everything that we need for the korbanos is all included in the mitzvah. The mikdash, the kelim, and the whole package. And that seems to be the Rambam's view. Remember, I once asked Rosh Hechter that there is a question you could ask about the Kohen Gadol. That the Kohen Gadol really only had to work one day a year. So he only had to be actually on duty on Yom Kippur. He didn't really have a job the rest of the year. There's a korban every day, the Menchas Chavitin, that comes from the Kohen Gadol. But if we have no Kohen Gadol, there are other ways to bring the Menchas Chavitin. So essentially, you only really need a Kohen Gadol for one day a year. So what would happen if the Kohen would die right after Yom Kippur? And the first Mishnayos in Yuma talk about the Kohen dying before Yom Kippur and all the steps that you take to prevent that from happening. Make sure that you want to have your wife from dying. You want to make sure that you have a Kohen who's married in place for Yom Kippur. But what happens if after Yom Kippur, the Kohen dies the day after? So is there any rush to get a new Kohen for the next 11 months? Or can you wait until Yom Kippur and appoint a Kohen Gadol then? So I asked Shachter about this. He thought that it's all included in the Rambam's formulation of the mitzvah, that everything that's a part of the Beis HaMikdash is all included in this one directive. But the Ramban says differently. Against the Ramban says the Kelim is a separate mitzvah. So there are those who want to suggest that the Rambam sees the mitzvah as being about the Korbanos, while the Ramban sees it as something else, and that's consistent with the Ramban in his commentary to Chumash in our Parsha, that Asuli Mikdash for Shachanti B'Sochav, that the purpose of the Mikdash is to have a home for the Shechina, as the Ramban understands. So that's why we build it. And therefore, the Kelim, it's a separate mitzvah. The Kelim is not the same thing as the mitzvah of building. So all of that affects the question of how you characterize this mitzvah. Is it a Hechsher mitzvah, or is it something else? The Chazon Nochem was the brother of the Shabin Rav's brother in the Sefer Chazon Nochem has a tshuva about this. He thought that's also the machlokes that once upon a time was had about when Tisha B'Av should be observed. Should Tisha B'Av be observed on the 9th of Av, or should it be observed on the 10th of Av? So we observe it on the 9th of Av. That was the beginning of the Churban. And the other opinion of the Gemara was that it should be observed on the 10th because Rubo Shalheichel Nisraf. Most of the problem, most of the destruction took place on the 10th of Av. So therefore, maybe that's a more appropriate time. So he thought the Machlokas was totally on what is the focus of the Beis HaMikdash. If the Beis HaMikdash is there for the Korbanos, so then as soon as the destruction started already, it was taken out of the equation for that. So therefore, the 9th of Av should be the focus. But if the issue is that the bias itself were interested in, so most of the bias was destroyed on the 10th, so therefore, that would be a more appropriate day to pick. This is also reflected, Rishpon has that also, that we have a discussion about building shuls, whether there is a mitzvah in building shuls or not. There's a relationship between the Beis HaMikdash and our shuls, and Halavai should be a more of a relationship. But the Gemara Megillah quotes a pasuk in Yechezkel, that Behilachem leMikdash Ma'at, and Mikdash Ma'at, the Gemara says, Elo Bate Knesios, Bate Medrashos, Sheba Bavel, Ubi New York, Ubi New Jersey, Ubi Pennsylvania, that these edifices are an extension of Canada, are an extension of the notion of the Beis HaMikdash. So if that's the case, there's room to wonder about that also. Is there a mitzvah in building a shul, or is that a hechi timtza in order for the purposes of tefillah? It has nafkaminas because there's a big machlokis, the Abnezer and the Mechas Elazar and others, about is there any leniency to allow any construction on a shul on Shabbos. Normally we don't allow, we certainly don't do construction on Shabbos, that's on Malacha Daraisa, and we normally don't allow it to be done on our behalf either. It's Amir al-Akum in especially intense form, because if it's on our property, then there are additional issues. So normally we're very machmir on that, so the question is there any kula in regards to construction of the shul? And they assume that it's totally on this whole question, is it a mitzvah specifically to build the shul, or is it more of a means to an end? So it's the same kind of question that we have regarding the Beis HaMikdash. Hi.
I would say that it's connected to building a Beis HaMikdash, and since you can't do that on Shabbos, then the shul wouldn't be able to be built.
Well, for sure you can't. For sure you can't construct the shul, and you cannot do the building on Shabbos. But just like we also find a Beis HaMikdash that maybe it can happen on Shabbos Yontif, that's what the Gemara was suggesting that they were explaining based on that Rashi. So what if it happens through somebody else? What if you have non-Jews working on your shul? So for sure, a Jew cannot build a shul on Shabbos. But even to have a Mir L'Akum shouldn't be allowed either. We're machmir on that when it comes to our own houses. It's an Isser D'Raisa through a Mir L'Akum. And especially, we're even more machmir on our houses that are public and visible. So the question is there any room for kula when it comes to a shul? So this is the machlokas achronim, and some assume that it's totally on this question of what exactly is the nature of the mitzvah. Is there a mitzvah to build a shul, or is it a hechi timtza? So it could be that the Rambam understands that the Binyan Beis HaMikdash is kind of a hechsher mitzvah. It's a means to an end, and that's why he sees it more as a function of the entire community rather than like some kind of maisa mitzvah like tefillin, where rules like mitzvah saseh shahazman grama might have possibly been relevant. So there is a question you might possibly ask, that how could it be the Rambam sees the Beis HaMikdash as for the purpose of Karbanos? The Rambam paskins like a phrase that appears a number of times in Shas, Shamati Shemakriven Afal Pi She'ein Bayis, that you can bring Karbanos even without a Beis HaMikdash. So if that's true, so does it really make sense to say the Beis HaMikdash is for the purpose of Karbanos? If you could have Karbanos without a Beis HaMikdash, it was a whole discussion 150 years ago, I guess, at this point, when Reb Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer wanted to bring Karban Pesach, because he says we're not pater from Karban Pesach, we're just anusim, but we have a chi of courage for the bittel of not bringing Karban Pesach, and you don't really need a Beis HaMikdash. You need a lot of other things, but you don't need a Beis HaMikdash. So he tried to figure out how to bring that back, and it was a whole discussion of the Achronim, whether that was a tenable suggestion or not. So, in any event, if you could have Karbanos without the Beis HaMikdash, so then is it really feasible to say that the Beis HaMikdash is for the purpose of Karbanos? So, presumably, yes. You know, presumably, it still makes sense, because we know that you can daven without a shul, and yet we still build shuls, so we can daven. So, we understand that the shul enhances the tefillah experience, and therefore we build shuls for that purpose. And so too, the Beis HaMikdash enhanced the Karban experience, even if it's theoretically possible to have Karbanos without the Beis HaMikdash. So this is a whole discussion, how exactly to understand the difference between the possibilities here. So the Ragachavar has a suggestion that maybe there were different answers if we're talking about the Mikdash or we're talking about the Mishkan. That maybe the Mishkan was a mitzvah b'fnei atzmo, it was a mitzvah itself to build the Mishkan, and that's where we have the enthusiastic participation of the Jewish people, because they are doing this act that is itself a mitzvah, while the Beis HaMikdash, that's more of a hechsher mitzvah, and therefore it can be done through outside contractors, and it didn't have either the requirement or the enthusiasm that would have come through being a national project. So that's interesting on a technical lumdish view. Question is, though, why should that difference be? So that's a little harder to understand, and especially because it seems like it's going in the wrong direction. We'd like things to be better the second time, not the first time. Rabbi Lam, Lam Gesund, has an essay about this. He had a drasha about this many decades ago that was printed in, once again, Mitoch Olam on the Haftorahs, where he talks about this difference. He actually quotes this Ragachavar, and he suggests that it was a function of the different attitudes, the different personalities involved. That Shlomo, as the Pasuk tells us, Shlomo is famous for Chachma, he's famous for his wisdom, while Moshe's goal, Moshe's very wise also, but his goal here is Kavod, the Kavod of the Shekhinah, the Kavod of Hashem. So that is a whole different focus and a different attitude. And we really need both. And as he elaborates in this drasha, the world has often suffered from people who are very smart intellectually, but they don't have a sense or an aspiration of kavod shamayim, or of human dignity, or of ethics overall. And that leads to tremendously dangerous and unfortunate situations. Of course, in our own recent past, we've seen that. And to that extent, that's the difference that's reflected here. So again, it's a little bit of a depressing approach, because we want things to be getting better. It sounds like the Mishkan had a better background to it than the Mikdash did. And of course, Shlomo HaMelech, you can't accuse them of not being concerned with Kvod HaShchina, nor can you accuse Moshe Rabbeinu of not being a Chacham. But presumably it's a question of emphasis. Rav Rivlin, in his essays, he also discusses these differences, and he suggests that each structure was appropriate for where the people were at the time. And at that time of the desert, so the Jews were focused on their own internal national status and becoming a nation together, and therefore the Mishkan reflected that attitude as a joint national project. While once they were living in Eretz Yisrael, and once they had a official land, and they were a country, they were an entity. So now the Beis HaMikdash is like an official government building, so to speak. It's a formal structure. It's no longer a project of the people as much as a project of the king. It represents the Melucha, and it also represents his international relations as well, and was built together with international involvement, and that's a goal that we have to the Beis HaMikdash, that it should be available. Ki Beis Tefillah Yikarei L'Chol HaAmim, and that the Beis HaMikdash is meant to serve as a beacon for all the people of the world who are able to appreciate the Kadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, the Gemara tells us that the Churban happened because the Caesar's Churban was rejected. It was rejected for technical reasons because they had a nefarious mum placed on it so that it would be rejected. But you know, the rejection that he took personally led to the whole Churban, and Maral discusses that as a part of the notion that it was meant to be perceived as a international center. So that's a fundamental difference between the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan. But again, it seems like we're moving away from some of the nicer values associated with the Mishkan. So the Tana de Be'elio, referring quotes, Tana de Be'elio actually says that there were advantages to the Mishkan. And look at what happened, that the Beis HaMikdash ended up being destroyed and overturned, while the Mishkan is hidden away and protected. And why is that? Because the Mishkan was done, b'nedivos halev, was done through the generosity of the people. And ultimately, it's going to be restored, and the Shechina will inhabit it yet again. So exactly what that means practically, you have to see. But b'karuv b'yameinu. But the suggestion seems to be that ultimately we'll have all of these themes harmonized, and that's the structure that is going to last l'olam vayeh. One could also suggest that the language that we emphasize is different in the two structures. That the word, both Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash, both had two goals, which you find in the language in both places, in the Parsha and in the Haftorah. One, it is a Mikdash, and Mikdash is something that is dedicated, is set aside for God, and it maybe connotes a certain aloofness, something that is really separate from all of our other concerns of life. While the Mishkan, from Lishkon, from Shechina, has to do with presence and living, and it emphasizes God's living among us, which is a very different point of focus, even though, again, you find the language in both places, in both contexts. So the Mishkan in our Parsha is described as Suli Mikdash, and you find also in the Haftorah the language of the Mishkan addressed towards the Mikdash, but it's a different emphasis. So it sounds like in the context of the Midbar, we're more emphasizing the notion of the Shechina among us, of God's presence together with us, and we're all united in that experience, while the Beis HaMikdash is a place that is sanctified and set aside, has a certain aloofness to it, has a certain connotation of emphasizing its being set aside for God, and perhaps that also bears out to a certain extent in the details, again, without taking away from the fact that we have clearly both themes in each of them, but perhaps there is a somewhat of a different emphasis, which the names themselves suggest. So all of this gives us a message, a theme to look to, and that's a part of the Parsha, it's a part of the Haftorah. The Haftorah has a lot more to say about the details of the construction. There is a lot that's brought into that discussion, different attitudes, the Mekubalim and others, in terms of how much do we derive from the dimensions, from the numbers, from all of the details. If you want to see a little bit of discussion about this, I would direct you again to Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky's thoughts that have been collected in the Sefer Emes Liakov to Melachim, where he goes into the different approaches as to what we can glean from these details. And it's a whole different discipline. The first of the details, though, that the Haftorah mentions, very striking, is it talks about the windows. And the windows, in addition to being the first detail, they have a description which might be contradictory. They are shkufim and atumim, which means that they are open and closed at the same time, although it's subject to a lot of discussion what that means, that they are wide and narrow, open and closed, and they're somewhat contradictory descriptions. And there are different interpretations, and some of them contradict each other, some mutually exclusive interpretations as to what exactly is being described here. But Rashi, in the Pasuk, Rashi is quoting from the Gemara Menachos that they were wide on the inside and narrow on the outside. And it's as if to make the point that we don't need light. We have windows, but we don't need light, so we can have a very narrow opening towards the outside. Rebbe Kamenetsky commenting on that line from the Gemara, he says, so then why didn't we just have no windows at all? Why do we have these strangely formed windows? And he said, because that wouldn't be a bias anymore without any windows. And the Gemara says, you should daven in a place that has windows. If you don't have windows, he says, that's a beis ha-sohar, it's a jail. You want to have a habayis, you need to have some kind of windows. But they're structured a certain way to show we don't need the lights. But Rav Rivlin has an essay about this also, where he notes that the idea is that this is the opening theme in the description of the Beis HaMikdash in order to emphasize that we believe that the Beis HaMikdash is a source of or for the world. It's not taking in the light from the outside, but it is shining light to the rest of the world, and again, consistent with this theme of basic tefila yikar l'chol ha'amim, and therefore, in order to kind of set that tone, that's the opening theme of the description of the physicality of the Beis HaMikdash. Abel, just to add one note, and I saw an interesting idea that Ram Heschel Reisman, in the Sefer Yunim Haftorah, when he starts talking about this Haftorah, so he focuses a little bit on this difference of the Mikdash and the Mishkan, that the Mikdash involved this tax rather than a Diva Salev. And just coming from there to look at the Parsha, the emphasis on Nediva Salev, and as a stand-in for Tzedaka in general. So many Mefarshim point out that it's a grammatical issue that the Mefarshim struggle with, that why the Parsha starts off that we should speak to the Jewish people, Yikhu Li Truma, that we should take a donation. It says they should take for me a donation. So why v'yichu li truma? Grammatically, you would think it would say they should give a donation, v'yitnu li truma. So there are different suggestions as to why the language is like that. Some say it's talking to the gaboyim, that the gaboyim should collect donations. There's a famous Beis Halevi. The Beis Halevi says that if you want to make an investment in this world, you have money, and you want to buy something that's going to last, so there's only one really secure investment. That anything you put your money into, you don't really know what's going to happen to it. But when you give your money to tzedakah, so then you have olam haba, then you have a zchus that is untouchable. That's the only really secure investment that you have. So the language of yikhu li truma is saying you should take through your giving, that you should recognize that that is a investment that you're making that's much better than anything else you're going to think about investing in. So there's a lot of discussion about what that phrase means, and by Reisman in his essay, talks about how in general the whole attitude of chesed and tzedakah is that one is supposed to feel that they are gaining as much as they are giving, and that that is a major part of the mindset, and that that manifests itself in different ways. And through that, he has a discussion about a line in the Gemara. This isn't probably Pashup Shat, but it's an interesting idea. It says that the Gemara, there is a discussion in general about whether you need kavana for tzedakah, whether you need mitzvah lishma, whether you need to give tzedakah out of pure motives or out of only pure motives. So the Gemara has a line. There are different sources in Shas that indicate in different ways. But the Gemara has a line which says that Ta'omer Salazulut Staka Amanash Yichya Bni. Let's say a person, Chmal's son, has a sick child. So he says, I'm going to give Staka so that my child should survive. So that sounds like an ulterior motive for doing it. So nonetheless, the Gemara says, Harezu Tzadik Gomer. The person is a complete tzaddik. In other words, there's nothing that is lacking about such an act. The Chafetz Chaim has a discussion: is it maybe a Girsa issue? Is the Gemara really saying it's that Tzadik Omer, or is it saying maybe it was Rashi Tevis? Maybe it was really meant to say Hareza Staka Gemur. This is an absolute act of Staka, but the person's ulterior motives are separate from that. So that's a whole discussion. Now, clearly, there's a lot more to say about this because ulterior motives are come on different levels. This is a pretty lofty ulterior motive. You're talking about the schus of the mitzvah. Accounting for you, or there are much baser ulterior motives that you can think of. You know, somebody giving purely for kavod is an ulterior motive that's on a lower level, clearly, than somebody who's tapping into the schus that the tzedaka would, and you can get lower than that. Let's say somebody's giving tzedaka so that they'll have influence over someone else. You know, there's all kinds. You can get much worse as far as ulterior motives are than almanashi yechevini. Nonetheless, that's a whole part of the discussion as to how does that affect the act of tzedakah. So Rabbi Reisman has a cute word about this. Again, it's not Pasha Pshat, but he says that the idea is that what's really going on is this person is helping out an ani, but he doesn't want the ani to feel like he's being helped. He wants to do it in a way that is also considerate to the ani's feelings. So he conveys an attitude that he's benefiting more than the ani is. So when he does it, he is telling him, yeah, I'm not doing this because I'm helping you. I'm doing this because it's helping me. I'm doing this because it's a zchus for me to help you. And he says, that's why the lashon of the Gemara is not the person is hanosa in tzedakah, and he has this in mind. He says, ha-omer, that he's dafka saying it out loud. He's doing it in such a way that he's conveying to the ani that he gets more out of it than the ani does, and he's doing that in order to make the ani feel more dignified. So because of that, that's why we say such a person is a tzaddik omer. Such a person is accomplishing something very great.
Where is this Gemara?
The Gemara appears in a few places. Gemara is in Sukkah, Gemara is in Rosh Hashanah. The beginning of Rosh Hashanah comes up. So in any event, that's just a nice idea, but it goes to this whole theme of Nediva Salev and appreciating exactly what that means. And it seems chaval that seems to be lacking in the later generation in the Beis HaMikdash and the way it's described. But ultimately, La'asulavo, we look for a harmonization of all of these ideas, and it should be Bekarv B'Yameinu. We will see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shechina should be among us in a context both of Chachma and of Kavod and of Achdus, and Keni Hiratzon, that we should soon see that moment. So we'll stop here. I wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos, and we'll see you soon. Okay. Yeshikach. So I don't know if you want to see anybody in the hall, or should we go to the basement?